From all outward appearances, people saw a man who was a loving husband and father, successful novelist, English professor, and a keyboardist in a rock and roll band, no less. But in reality, the truth was she was a woman locked in a man's body. Hello, I'm Valerie Jackson, and today I'm going Between the Lines with best-selling author Jennifer Finney Boylan. You may have read her bestseller, She's Not There, the first best-selling book by a transgender American, or seen her on Oprah or Larry King sharing her story of her decision to stop living a lie that she was a man and to become her authentic self, a woman. In her latest book, I'm Looking Through You, Jennifer talks of growing up in a house haunted by spirits, both dead and alive. Thank you so much for allowing us to go between the lines with you today, Jennifer.
This is too cool to be here, and I thank you for having me as your guest.
Well, I enjoyed this book very, very much, and I wish I had time to really go through almost every chapter with you, but we'll just start with the house, okay? Your childhood home was, ironically enough, called The Coffin, C-O-F-F-I-N, The Coffin House, as in casket. Describe your house and some of its haunts.
Well, imagine, if you will, a three-story Victorian eyesore with crazy slanting roofs and many, many rooms, some of which were empty, in fact, because our family, when we moved in anyway, didn't have enough stuff to fill it. And I was up on the third floor by myself, and there were several other rooms up there. One of which we called the haunted room, another of which we called the monkey bathroom, because the monkey bathroom, we learned later, had at one time a previous family that had lived there had kept a chimpanzee in the bathroom, and the monkey's name was Jesus. Why was the monkey named Jesus? Because when people entered that room and they saw the monkey swinging around the shower curtain and screaming, they would say, "Jesus!" So it was a house. It was probably about 100 years old, and it was a place filled with all kinds of ghosts. Some of those ghosts are, you know, what I call the Scooby-Doo variety of ghosts, which is to say there were creepy footsteps, and occasionally we'd see floating clouds of mist and figures that would appear in the mirror and stuff like that. But it was also had some other ghosts, including two people that became ghosts to me in different ways, my father and my sister. And above all, it had this young transgender person, a boy then. When I was a child, I was haunted by the idea of the woman I wondered if I might become. And now that I'm, what shall we say, a woman of a certain age, as I look back on that place, I feel haunted by the boy that I used to be. So, you know, and I think I want to quickly say this is not a condition that is particular to transgender people. I mean, I think we all do this. We have a way of trying to make our peace between the people we've become and the people we've been. I mean, it's more extreme if you're a trans person, because what is it like for a woman to have a boyhood? But we're all haunted by the children we've been, as well as by the people we'll become in the future.
Right. Well, you say you're not sure you believe in ghosts, even though you've seen them with your own eyes. Isn't that kind of a contradiction?
Well, I know two things. One, I believe in science, and I'm very I know full well that people tend to believe. Sometimes people will believe anything, just because it fits into their view of the world. I also know, though, that I believe that there is more to this world than what we can see. So it kind of leaves me in the middle. I've seen ghosts with my own eyes, but I don't want to rule out the possibility that maybe it was the way the light fell, or maybe it was something I had for dinner, or maybe it was something that I was carrying around in my own heart.
Because even now you questioned in the book whether or not those memories of ghosts were real, or were the things that maybe you just imagined.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a question that I raised toward the end of the book as to whether or not all this time I've been haunting myself. You know, statistics tell us that about 40% of Americans say they believe in ghosts. About 25% claim to have seen them. And interestingly, the more education you have, the more likely you are to believe in ghosts. And I think the older you are, the more likely you are to believe in ghosts.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I can tell you that maybe most people don't believe in ghosts, but everybody knows somebody who's haunted.
Well, that's the truth. And I want to get to that in a minute. But before we do, I wanted to talk about that ghost thing, because what I learned, among other things in this book, was that there are five types of ghosts.
Yes.
Can you remember the five?
Let's see if I can remember. Yes, according to a ghost buster, I love using that word, a paranormal investigator that I hung out with briefly, when I asked her to come back to the house and check out the place for me, she said there were five kinds of ghosts. She said you have your intelligent spirits, who are the most interesting ones to encounter because they can teach us things, supposedly. You have your residual spirits, or repeaters, which just keep doing the same thing over and over again. There's poltergeists, who supposedly, the way you can tell if you have a poltergeist is if you can hear the ghost. They make noise. Then there's a new class of spirit called shadow people, which is divided into three subgroups: the full figure, the fuzzy, and class C is globules. And finally, they have malevolent ghosts. And I said to my Ghostbuster that, you know, those sound like good ones to avoid. And she said, yeah, they do, but you don't always get the chance in life to meet the ghosts you want.
As a matter of fact, why don't you read the beginning of the chapter? It's on 108, where you start talking about talking to the Ghostbuster, if you will. Just read the beginning of that chapter, if you don't mind.
I do not believe in ghosts, although I have seen them with my own eyes. This isn't so strange, though, really. A lot of people feel the same way about transsexuals. Just because I'm skeptical, though, doesn't mean I'm not curious. The problem, of course, is that anyone earnestly desiring to learn more about zombies, or, for that matter, transgendered people, has to first sift through a nearly endless pile of half-truths, religious bigotry, crazy postmodern theory, and just plain hooey. And scientists, who surely should be at the forefront of any exploration of the inexplicable, generally excuse themselves politely when these topics come up and head off to the men's room, shaking their heads and muttering phrases like, "Whoa, Scooby, this is, like, weirding me out," a sentiment with which I can only wholeheartedly sympathize. Maybe, someday, researchers will tell us more about what makes people see things that are not there, or yearn to inhabit a body other than the one into which they were born. In the meantime, when it comes to ghosts or gender, we're all pretty much on our own.
Mm.
I always remember from that scene is when I first walked into that house with the Ghostbuster, my mother came down the stairs and I told her that a paranormal investigator was coming over. And she said, "Now, wait, when you say paranormal, do you mean other transsexuals?" I had to explain to my mother that was not the question.
You said that in a way you had to become a ghost yourself to survive.
Yeah, well, in some ways, if you're a transgender person, it's just so darn strange. I mean, at this point in our culture, if you're gay or lesbian, people know what that is. There are role models. It's not even anything you have to explain anymore. Whereas, if you're transgender, you still kind of have to kind of explain to people what is that, and it's something which I, at any rate, it's a hard life, and it was something that I fundamentally did not want to be true. So I felt that the only way for me to get by was to kind of pretend I was a guy like everybody else,
and be a shadow of yourself.
And it's again, it's a longing that I think we all have at times in our life to be like everybody else.
Yeah. Jennifer, you said that there were many theories as to transgender or transsexual, whether it's genetics, hormones, or whatever. But you said that the only theory you trust is the story. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I know is that, you know, it's the oldest cliche in storytelling is show, don't tell. And I found that's true not only in story, but in my life as well. When I try to tell, which is to say, lecture people about what does it mean to be transgender, what does that mean, people's eyes tend to glaze over and they quickly, you know, want to change the subject. If you tell a story, though, suddenly people are kind of pulled in. After the first time I was on Oprah, I got a wonderful email from somebody in the Midwest who said, "You know the you know the odd thing about you, Jenny Boylan, is you seem almost like a person somebody could know."
Oh,
and I wanted to say,
normal,
"Well,
huh?
You're darn right, I'm a person someone could know because I
wow.
am." But what she means in that is that maybe she'd never thought about transgender people right. before. But if you tell a story, suddenly something that seems strange and impossible to understand, suddenly it seems familiar. My mother has a wonderful phrase. She says, "It's impossible to hate anyone whose story you know."
I love that.
And transgender is admittedly a confusing territory. As an umbrella term, that word transgender includes all sorts of other people. It includes transsexuals, people like me who go from one physical sex to another. It includes drag queens. It includes cross-dressers. It includes all sorts of people who may or may not have anything in common with each other. Transgender is kind of a nice word to use because it seems to cover anything that includes the gender variant. But that's also one reason why it's sometimes hard for people to get their mind around it, because it's really referring to all sorts of different things. Anyway, it's not so important for me that everyone understand all of this, whether it's neurological or biological. The important thing is that people know that these are real people who are living human lives and very hard lives, and their stories need to be told too.
You were talking a moment ago about hauntings and people that are haunted. And why do you think so many of us are haunted?
Well, I think that people become haunted when they've had an experience that they can never quite get over, something that's either so wonderful or so terrible that they're always kind of living, either they're living more in that space than in their present lives, or, and I think this is more frequent, they never go back and think about a certain part of their lives. Like, you know, survivors of trauma, you know, for very good reasons, don't go back and relive that trauma over and over again. And yet, if we have parts of our lives that we can't visit, we become people without a past in some ways. I mean, with transgender people, you have a very extreme case of people who really have a before and an after. It's almost as if they have two parts of their lives. And yet, our lives are not two stories. Our lives are one story. And I think the way we make peace with our ghosts is by seeing our lives as one continuous story, not before, not after, but just one integrated story.
Well, how does that help you to remedy the haunting, though?
Well, because I think if you see your life as a story, you can make sense of your life. You can see it as a progression,
right? A fluid kind of thing.
Yeah, and you don't have to live in that trauma all the time. You don't have to live in that past. At least that's what works for me. I'm a storyteller, so. But I'm sure there are other ways of making your peace.
The characters in your book, who are your family members? We're quite fascinating, especially grandmother.
Oh my gosh,
Gammy. How do you spell it? Cammy.
Gammy. Yes. Yeah. And my grandmother had. I have to do this voice because she had this way of talking, and she would say, "You know, did I ever tell you about the night your father was conceived?" And we would all say,
"Yes,
you told us." And then she'd just start plowing into the story. 1927, the Claridge Hotel, Atlantic City, New Jersey. And we'd say, "Please don't tell us." Now, my grandmother also had a wonderful sidekick. That's the only thing to call her, is a sidekick. This tiny woman from North Yorkshire, whose name was Hilda Watson, who could hardly hear a thing. And she just made the sound like this. When she knew she was being spoken to, she didn't really respond to, because she really couldn't hear. So they were like Abbott and Costello. You know, my grandmother would be, "Hilda, do you know where you'd get if you went east from Atlantic City?" And she'd say, "Whoop, whoop." "If you went east from Atlantic, whoop, whoop. Spain, that's where."
Well, if you've just joined us, I'm Valerie Jackson, and I'm going between the lines with best-selling author Jennifer Finney Boyland about her latest book, I'm Looking Through You, Growing Up Haunted, a memoir. Your dad, too, could relate to.
Well, my father was a lovely, shy man, and there's a scene in the book where he asked me to play the piano for him. He liked to have me play things for him, and then, halfway through he'd say, well, now play that in ragtime, or play that backwards, or play it, in a different key. His theory being that this kind of open-mindedness would make me smarter.
Did it work?
Sometimes I think, oh, my God, this whole transgender thing is his fault. He succeeded in making me so open-minded I took it a little bit farther than anyone expected. But anyway, yeah. My father had several brushes with cancer, and he was kind of fading out, even as we watched at various times in our life. And there's a scene where I had been... I'd been up in my room, dressed like a girl, and then I suddenly heard downstairs the sound of Beethoven being played on the piano. And I thought, oh, my God, what's this? So I quickly slid back down the bat pole and put on my boy T-shirt, and I came downstairs, and there was my father at the piano. And we had this conversation, and I remember he said, you'll take care of them. And I said, who? He said, your mother, your sister, when I'm gone. I said, you're not going anywhere. You said you were going to be fine. He said, yeah, that's right. But, if anything happened to me, you'd be the man, wouldn't you? And I said, what do you... He said, promise me you will be the man. So, it's a very hard thing to have to promise your father you're going to be the man, when you know you're really a woman or a girl at that time. So I remember I sat down there and I played the piano for him, and halfway through the tears just started coming down my cheeks, but of course I couldn't wipe them away because my hands were full. I was playing the piano,
right.
And so my father got up and he sat down next to me and he wiped the tears away and he said in his kind of shy Irish way, there now, that's enough of that.
And was that the same time that he was listening to some music and you came into him and he talked about how he didn't hear a certain part of the concerto because he had to travel, he had to leave.
And no, then, it was a little what was later. That? Well, in his final days, when he was really dying of melanoma, he kept hearing music, and at one point when he was dying, the Beethoven's Ninth Symphony was on the radio. What was then the great classical station WFLN in Philadelphia, now, of course, a rock and roll station like everywhere else, except WABE, 90.1. And I remarked about something about the third movement, and he said, oh, no, I wasn't here for that. I had to travel. And he was kind of drifting kind of in and out.
Yeah, you know what? That reminded me of my father. Because when my father was dying of cancer also, he would lay in bed and kind of sleep for 2 days or at a time sometimes, and then he'd wake up and he'd ask for 6 Pepsis or 6 Cokes or something. And I said, Dad, what are you doing out there astral traveling and you're coming in for a checkup or to get your refurbishment, Because I really believe that he was, going around in a way saying goodbye.
Well, I should ask you, do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
Have you seen them?
No, I've never seen one, but I think I've felt them.
You felt them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of people tell that to me, that there's always a sense of, and so when you feel this thing, what is it that we're feeling?
Yeah.
Is it something that we're just feeling from our own heart? Or is there really something external in the world that's coming to touch us? And sometimes I wonder, are those really two different things? Is there some way in which, the people that we've lost, if they are out there, are spirits, maybe the place they really live is in our hearts, and so we feel them outside, but they're coming from our hearts, maybe.
Well, you said something that kind of struck me too, which was that being transgender was really a gift, in a sense.
Well, it is a gift in a way. I mean, look, I think this is what we all do. We when we're young, well, when I was young, I cursed the fact that I felt this thing that made no sense and that no one else could understand. And everyone thought was, if they did know about it, they'd think it was weird. So I was always longing, oh, if only I were like everybody else. If only I could be a man as my father asked, be the man. And yet, what I guess I've learned is that, you know, the secret of life is maybe to take what we think of as our curses and make them into our
Absolutely.
Blessings. And so somehow I got through this whole process. And here I am, a middle-aged woman with, you know, a good family and the people that love me and, you know, friends and a job that I love. And I'm really a very lucky person.
Very
and
fortunate.
I've been able to see things that most women mm-hmm. don't get to see. I've certainly
well,
seen things
gift,
that men
probably.
Don't get
that's,
to see.
Well, that's probably the gift, being able to see something from two different perspectives.
Well, yeah. I guess maybe the thing is, you know, that we don't get to choose our gift, but we do get to choose what we do with it. I mean, plenty of us have that, you know. I mean, and to be honest, there are days even now when I think, oh, geez, you know, I wish I were like everybody else. This is too hard, because it is a hard life. Even though, as far as transgender people go, mostly I feel it's a success story. I don't want to put it that way because it sounds so snotty.
Well,
but I know plenty of trans people for whom life is much harder
right.
than it was for me. And I was very blessed throughout the whole process.
I was just going to say part of yours was probably helped by, well, in the book she's called Grace, but
yes,
in
but
life you're.
Wife.
Well,
we can
wife.
Say wife.
Yeah, okay, okay.
I mean, legally, wife.
Yeah, right. She's still your wife.
Although
legally.
We say spouse or partner mm-hmm. or something. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can say wife, too.
Yeah.
For a while, I was afraid to say wife because I was afraid that would make me into a husband. But, yeah, the interesting thing is that we are legally married, and we are allowed to remain married for as long as we want to remain married.
Right.
If we got divorced tomorrow and the day after that I remarried someone, I could only remarry a man legally. Which is, I mean, this isn't what this show is about, but mm-hmm. the same-sex marriage thing, the peculiar aspect of this is that it is constantly kind of undone by the trans card in this. There is no law that you can make that outlaws same-sex marriage that will not be somehow turned on its head by the fact of transgender people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, for a while in Texas, there was a law that only people of different chromosomes could be married.
Wow.
Well, fine. But what it meant, in fact, was that for the case of – this is somewhat of a rarity, but – and this law was passed back in the late 80s, I think. For a same-sex couple, two women, one of whom was born male, who's now legally become male. So your United States passport says F. Those people can legally be married because one of them has a Y chromosome, which meant, guess what? Texas, as a result of that law, became the first state in the union to allow same-sex marriage.
Wow. Which I never would have guessed.
Well, and I think that law has, in fact, since been overturned. But it is kind of an interesting way in which the trans element destabilizes everything, which is nothing I'm – particularly proud of, but it is a fact that we need to accept the fact that people are gendered in all kinds of ways, and it's not always this kind of simple binary.
Right. Right. Now, Oprah gave you a pretty rough time on her show.
Do you think?
People
have said that. But
she challenged, you know, whether your wife should have stayed with you or whether you should have turned into a man and therefore creating so much pain for her and so forth. But I really appreciated her response in terms of, in my own words, there's so much more to a marriage than sex.
There is.
And
look, most couples who go through this don't survive. And that's, you have to accept that because everyone gets to make their choices. But the thing that people find hard to get their minds around is that my partner decided that her life was better with me in it than without.
And I can understand that.
I think that, I mean, I'm not the greatest person in the world, but on a good day, I can be a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that our family would stay together, I think that's a good thing. And I'm proud of my family.
And you're best friends.
And we're best friends.
You know,
our children, so far, it's been a non-issue for our children. And they're now, halfway through middle school. I have to tell the one story. One day, when he was about 5 or 6, my older boy looked at me and said, you know, we can't be calling you daddy anymore if you're a girl. It's just too weird. And I said, well, you can call me Jenny because, you know, that's my name. And he said, Jenny? That's like the name you'd give a lady mule. And I said, okay, well, what do you want to call me? And he said, well, how about Maddie? Because that's like half mommy, half daddy. And I know a girl named Maddie. And his little brother quickly said, or Dommy. So Dommy didn't stick, but Maddie stuck. And so, you know, their friends call me Maddie. They're, you know, and it's a very, if you saw our family, you would see a group of people who love each other. And you mightn't forget, as we do, that there's anything particularly unusual about us. Because guess what? There's not.
Something else that struck me was when you said that the main thing required to understand the condition is imagination.
It is. And I think it kind of gets back to this issue of showing rather than telling. You know, it was Gandhi who told us, be the change you wish to see. And if you want people to understand something, you should show it to them. You should, in some ways, live the change. So the hard thing for trans people is that you have a problem which for most other people is something they've never even thought about. You know, what gender am I? It's also true if you're not trans, to some degree you are freed from having to think about sex in the same way that white people in this country are freed from having to think about what race they are. You know, you just think, oh, well, you know, everyone's like me. Oh, well, everybody's not like you. But because transgender people are such a tiny little fraction of the population, non-transgender people tend to think of us not as people who have a unique embodiment deserving of compassion. Instead, we tend to think of them as like people who are really messed up or people who really are gay and just can't get over it or who really, you know, people have all sorts of theories about why we are the way we are. And instead of having a theory, what people ought to do is have an imagination, look into their hearts and try to accept the fact that this is a real person and not a theory and someone who deserves understanding and love.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us today. Jennifer's book is I'm Looking Through You, Growing Up Haunted, a Memoir. I enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. To learn more about the books and authors featured on Between the Lines, listen to an archived program or participate in the online book club. Visit our website at wabe.org/BTL. To subscribe to a podcast of the program, go to npr.org. Join us next week for another engaging program because there's always more to learn when you go between the lines. Executive producer of this program is Lois Reitzes. Producer, Marjorie Lancer. Editor, Mike Johns. Technical producer, Ken Mary. Production assistant, Chichi Morka. Opening and closing music by Afro Blue. And I'm your host, Valerie Jackson. For information on how to be a funder for Between the Lines, please call 678-686-0390. Between the Lines is a production of 90.1 WABE.